Oh, it offends me to the soul to hear a robustious, periwig-painted fellow tear a passion to tatters, to very rags, to split the ears of the groundlings, who for the most part are capable of nothing but inexplicable dumb shows and noise.
Well, Henny, you better hang on to your bear bodkin, because you're going to hate this. It's John Malden, your host, the Inexplicable Dumb Show, starting now.
Hi, and welcome to episode 557 of the Inexplicable Dumb Show. I'm John Malden, and this week I'm joined via Skype by actor Becca McCoy, and she's going to take us flying. So we're going to get into that conversation just after, you guessed it, these brief messages. Would you like to be a pal of the Inexplicable Dumb Show? Why don't you head on over to www.inexplicabledumbshow.com and look for the Hosting Donations Accepted button. Press that and make a donation and help the Dumb Show cover its web hosting fees. Your donation is greatly appreciated. Thank you for your support. Hey, Putz, get off your fat tuchus and do something. I'm tired of you laying around complaining about this and that. Forget about it. It's all you say. You bum.
Shut up already, Frank. Oh, God, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. I'm sorry. He gets wound up around the first of the month. You know, when you're supposed to pay the rent.
Now, give Frank a big tip. Hear about auditions, booking gigs, and other theater work around the South. Next. Well, IDSers, I'm joined by actor Becca McCoy, and she's going to talk to us, or she's going to take us flying. So welcome, Becca. How are you?
Come fly with me. I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing well. So tell us a little bit about the play Flying and what's it about and all that kind of fun stuff.
Well, it is such a great experience. Flying is a five-person play. I'm doing the Southeastern premiere. It had a world premiere in upstate New York over the summer. And the playwright is locally based to Tampa Bay. And I've collaborated with her many times. This is actually my fourth collaboration with her just in 2017. But it's the first time I'm getting to do one of her shows in, you know, a fully realized production. So it's essentially about three women flyers from World War II. It's based on oral histories and memoirs from women who served in the WASP program, the Women's Air Force Service Pilots. But rather than, you know, the real drama wasn't their training or their war service, you know, for the playwright, the real drama was what was it like to then come back to a world that's anxious for them to return to the way things were.
Right.
And they've just experienced this incredible, profound liberation, empowerment, enlightenment. And so it's sort of about adjusting to being a new person in an old life. You know, what happens when you're living in that chaos between what used to be and what is not yet, where, you know, you're defined more by what you don't know than what you do know. And then there's two male characters as well. One is the father of my character, who's very much the stalwart, the voice of, you know, the way that things are and always have been. And then one of my character's husband's war buddies, who has been badly injured in the war. And so he, you know, his story is about the things expected of men. And so he's incredibly handsome, and now he's also physically damaged, and he's incapable of performing the job functions of his previous job, and he needs to be retrained and start his life over. And he's so out of touch with who he used to be. And so it's this beautiful, layered, complex piece about finding out who you are and meeting other people and, you know, just communication and, oral history and, set into like a historical context.
So is there, any tie other than the playwright to the Tampa Bay area? I mean, was there a WASP based around there, or is that just
No. This playwright, Sheila Cowley, she was interested in their story. She just started like reading biographies and learning more about them. And so all three of the women characters are, amalgamations of various WASPs from memoirs and interviews and things. I've been to a couple of museums and I've watched hours of interviews and footage and read some books, and there were WASPs from all over the nation, and they certainly have also settled all over the country. But there isn't anyone specific in Tampa Bay that that she knew or is connected to.
Yeah. Well, that is kind of, I mean, it does raise an interesting point, because I've seen it in other, I've just like binge watched Foyle's War, for example. And then it deals that, okay, the war's over now, go back and, make cookies and, have babies.
What's been let them in so fast. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. My character, bake pie, make babies. That's what's okay. That's time to get back to normal.
All right.
What was so amazing is, I've learned incredible family history that I had no idea about, because no one in my family talked about it and I didn't think to ask. So, right. Now all of a sudden World War II is in the consciousness and we're all discussing and people go, oh, well, your grandfather piloted for his West Point training. I was like, what? Well, such and such. Well, when we were visiting in Indiana over the summer, we took a big road trip and went up to see my husband's family. And we were at breakfast with his grandma. And she said, oh, I wish that I could see you in the show. I was a riveter. And I was like, no, I did not know that you were a riveter. How did I not know that you were a riveter? And, the takeaway and why, I feel like Sheila just really nailed it on the head for where the drama truly lies, and to create a piece with historical context as opposed to a history play, was the next thing she said wasn't, and this is what it was like in the factory, and this is what it was like during the war. The next thing she said after, I was a riveter, was, and that's why I went to beauty school and opened my own salon, because I knew from that experience I could never have a boss other than myself.
Wow.
It's about like how it changed the trajectory, really the whole face of employment, in our nation. Right. And it's just incredible. And they didn't set out to do that. It was just a time of a patriotism that I don't think that we can fully appreciate or comprehend. And the women, it was necessary for them to be part of the war effort, and they wanted to be part of the war effort. And that's where it ended. They weren't acutely aware of systemic sexism. They weren't trying to break barriers or shatter glass ceilings. They just wanted to contribute. And then, you narrow that down even further with the women who were passionate about flying. And then you get, the 1,000, I think it was about 1,070 or 1,080 women who were inducted as, full WASPs, were accepted into the training, went to the training, got their wings and served. And so they just have the most fascinating stories to me, of how anybody knew in 1940 that, flying was going to be a great passion for them, what they went through to get the training at their own expense, and just how skilled they were, and the surprise for a lot of the males and the generals of that the women were as skilled as they were.
Right. Or maybe even more so.
Absolutely. In fact, my character references flying B-29 bombers. Those were the Super Fortress, the big, big, big mamajamas that dropped the nuclear bombs. And they trained the women to fly them to shame the men who were scared to fly them.
Wow.
Like, just, you know, well, a girl can do it, so obviously you can do it too. And when we were on this road trip, we went to Walter Robins, Georgia, which I'd never heard of. And we just randomly had, you know, booked a hotel there to split up a day's drive. And as we're approaching, there's all these billboards for the Museum of Aviation. And I thought, well, you know, even if it was like the kind of roadside attractions that we're used to in Florida, where it's like some shrunken heads and a gator in a tank, I was like, you know, maybe they have some model planes or something, but it might be interesting if we're already there. And I look it up online, and it is the U.S. Air Force's Museum of Aviation. They have over 80 warplanes on display in four hangars on this massive complex. For FAD, they have an SR-17 Blackbird. Mm. So, you know, for boys, like, that's a thing. He got to touch a Blackbird. But they had an extensive World War II display, including a B-29. And at the time, I didn't know what I was looking for. So I walk into the hangar and ask the docent, "Hi, I'm looking for the B-29. And he looks at me like I have four heads and just sort of points over his shoulder, because it's the thing taking up the entire hangar. It has a 140-foot wingspan. The other planes on display are under it. It's a monster." And it took my breath away. It really did. Because I just didn't, you know, you read, it's all academic. I'm just reading, it, listening to people's interviews, and you just don't know until you see it. And I'm looking forward to, about a week before we open, I'm going up flying in like a two-person plane with a friend.
Oh, cool.
Which I've never done before.
All right.
I think that's something that I can't possibly replicate without actually experiencing it.
And plus, if you look at, when you look at the World War II planes, and it is just sheet metal and rivets, it's amazing anybody survived.
Right? Because
nothing has like very strong, you know, heavy armor or anything.
Right.
It's like,
no,
wow.
And these women,
you said in
you
this?
Know, the reason that the WASPs are, you know, in such prominence at the moment was they were the stuff of legend, and the U.S. Air Force made an error in the 70s of putting out a press release saying that they were allowing women to pilot military planes for the first time in history. And these women from World War II were like, excuse me, because at the time they were not militarized. They were treated as civilians. They were hired as civilians. They were never given military status. So the 38 women who died, their bodies had to be returned to their family at the family's expense. So the other WASPs would take up collections. They weren't allowed to have a flag on their casket. They certainly didn't get any kind of veterans benefits. And all of that changed with that press release, and then the surviving WASPs organizing and, you know, getting their story out there. And now they have veteran status. They were given the Congressional Medal of Honor by President Obama, and they can be buried in Arlington. And so right now it's, you know, we're just like the that movie Hidden Figures, you know, like we're learning about this incredible piece of women's history that I certainly didn't learn about in school. And, you know, the stories that they tell about flying, one of the things that they specifically did was towing targets. So the women flew planes that had a target flag that they were towing, but the men were firing at them with live ammunition.
Oh.
And the women were well aware that they were being shot at with live ammunition. Mm. They flew junked planes. They flew planes directly from the factory. So, you know, who knows? And there was one interview with a woman who said she was flying and she saw smoke coming into the cockpit, and she started to panic. She said, not because of the smoke, but because the parachutes were not fitted to the women's bodies. They were just the male parachutes. And she said, from that altitude, the parachute would have been ripped right off my body. So she said, I just kept going. And I said, I'll make a decision when I see flames. I mean, just that kind of mental fortitude. And, you know, so yes, those women ended that experience. And, you know, you hear interviews, some of them continued to fly. Some of them never flew again. But all of them talk about the colors in the sky, what it was like to solo fly, and the fact that they knew from that point on that they could do anything that they put their minds to. And what an incredible, you know, revelatory experience. So it's just, it's a beautiful, beautiful play. And I love being in the world in the aftermath, you know, where my job as an actor includes having all of this knowledge. I've been so hungry to do the research to the extent that I ended up getting dramaturgy credit for the production because I had done so much work on my own, you know, and then just kept going and kept going, because the more that you digest, it's just in there.
Right.
And that is my character's truth, but it's lovely that, you know, my real responsibility on stage is not to convince the audience that I know how to repair an airplane engine, but, you know, to go on this journey from A to B emotionally. But having the privilege of garnering all of this knowledge, both from my family history and just knowing about these women and this time, has been amazing. You just kind of, you know, smack yourself on the wrist a little bit and go, you know, you can be curious and learn things outside of work. Just because you're an adult doesn't mean you have to stop learning
things. Right.
But it's, you know, it's just been a really wonderful reminder to stay curious.
Well, outstanding. So where is it being performed and how can we get tickets?
It is a co-production. This is another cool, nifty thing. The co-production between Tampa Repertory Theater, and this is my first time working with them, and Studio at 620. So we have 3 weeks of performances in Tampa and 1 week of performances in St. Pete. And I think more and more we're going to need to find ways to make that happen because the bridges and the transportation in this area are a real issue that the theater community has to contend with. So I'm excited that we're putting this show up on both sides of the bay because I think it needs to have as wide of an audience as it can possibly get. It's worthy. So we open with a preview on September 14th and then opening night September 15th. And we run until October 1st in Tampa and then October 4th through the 7th at Studio at 620 in St. Pete. And since that's all kind of confusing, all of that information is on my website and all of my social media.
Outstanding. And of course, I'll have links to it on the show notes page for this particular episode at www.inexplicabledumbshow.com. Well, thank you, Becca.
Thank you.
When guests can't appear in studio, they are interviewed over Skype. Skype is a great piece of software that turns your computer into a phone. Talk computer to computer or to any phone or cell phone in the world through the Skype Out program. Interested? Download Skype via inexplicabledumbshow.com. Just look for the download Skype button. Go ahead. Join in the fun.
If you love the Inexplicable Dumb Show as much as I do, don't be shy about it. Go ahead and wear your feelings on your sleeve, or at least your chest. Head on over to our Cafe Press store and wear your support for the IDS proudly. www.cafepress.com/dumbshow.
All right. right, so that is it. I'd like to thank actor Becca McCoy for stopping by today via Skype to chat about the play she's in, Flying. And, of course, ticket information we discussed about in the body of this podcast will be found on the show notes page for this particular episode at www.inexplicabledumbshow.com. Hey, do you want to be part of the Dumb Show? Then please do so by calling the voicemail line at 615-866-1282. Or put your thoughts in an email, podcast@inexplicabledumbshow.com. Or follow the show on Twitter, @inexplicableDS, @ inexplicable, D, S. Find out the latest comings and goings and whatnot for the show via our Twitter feed. So next week, we're going to see kind of what I've been up to these past weeks, and we're going to talk a little Three Sisters with Verge Theater Company and in conjunction with Belmont University Theater Department. So until next week, this is John Malden saying, hey, I'll see ya. Bye.
Are you a music lover? Then let Magnatune dazzle you with how different we are from the rest of the music industry. Interesting independent artists in diverse genres. Perfect quality wave files in addition to MP3s and many other formats. Instant album downloads or traditional CDs by mail with free shipping. All this and half of every sale goes directly to the artist. So visit us now at magnatune.com. That's M-A-G-N-A-T-U-N-E. Magnitude. We are not evil.
This podcast is a member of the Blueberry Network. Blueberry. No E's. That's Blueberry, BLUBRRY.com. Blueberry.com.
Pop Alternative Media.